Greetings, everyone, and welcome to On Track, our podcast series on legal and business developments in the post-COVID world. I'm Gil Porter, a partner at Haynes & Boone, and host of this series of podcasts. Today is June 24, 2021, and we are going to be talking about the stuff that most folks think we lawyers do all the time, disputes. One impact of the COVID pandemic was limitation of in-person attendance at arbitration and litigation proceedings. Haynes & Boone has quite a bit of experience representing clients in these remote proceedings and so-called hybrid proceedings. And I've asked two of my colleagues to share with us today some of the lessons learned in those proceedings, both in the U.S. and in England, along with their impressions about whether these developments are likely to continue as the world returns to normal. My colleagues joining us today are Fiona Kane, counsel in our London office, and Garrett Martin, associate from our Houston office. Fiona, in addition to her role as a central part of our litigation arbitration team in London, writes extensively on a variety of topics relating to disputes resolution, energy, and shipping, and is the editor of our popular newsletter on shipping, LNG, and offshore oil and gas. Garrett, who's recently been recognized for his work by Woodward White's Best Lawyers in America and by Thomson Reuters, is part of our U.S.-based litigation practice, representing clients in litigation, arbitration, and appellate matters involving the energy industry, including advocacy and environmental and financial disputes within that industry. Nathan Koppel, our Director of Media Relations, will act as moderator for this podcast. And I'm going to turn it over to Nathan in a moment, but first, our disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only, is not intended to be legal advice, does not establish an attorney-client relationship. The topics we discuss are fast-moving, subject to change. Legal advice of any nature should be sought from your legal counsel. That's it for now. I'm going to turn it over to Nathan, and then I'll chat with you all at the end. Nathan, it's all yours.
Well, thanks, Gil. Much appreciated. Great topic today. We've always tended to think of the day in court as sacrosanct for litigants, but of course, it just hasn't been possible since the pandemic. Fiona, I want to start with you and get your impressions about how the pandemic has impacted the way that English courts and arbitral bodies do business.
Hi there. Yes, over here in England, things moved quite quickly back in March to step to the virtual world. In mid-March, the Lord Chief Justice made it clear that it was vitally important for the administration of justice not to grind to a halt as a result of the pandemic. And this led to the courts reviewing their arrangements to ensure that telephone, video, and other technology could be used to continue as many hearings as possible remotely, and issued protocols and new practice directions for court users on remote hearings. The situation with arbitration was similar, although work on the Seoul Protocol, which dealt with video conferencing and international arbitration, had begun as early as 2018, and that was fortuitously issued in March 2020. Various arbitration institutions issued statements offering virtual arbitrations in March and April 2020. And over the next few months, guidelines were issued by the ICC and the LMAA, among others, on virtual hearings. So largely, yes, it's gone well.
And has it, as it stands now, is our disputes conducted largely virtually, or are our courts emerging more to pre-pandemic models of in-person hearings?
I'd say we are now returning to something of the previous position. So there are a number of hearings that are now taking place in person. I think we're finding that, particularly at the moment, we're somewhere probably at a hybrid arrangement where we have a number of hearings taking place in person, but there are arrangements made for those hearings for those that cannot travel to also attend via video.
That makes sense. And we're going to come back to you a little bit later and get your impressions of what it's been like to conduct remote proceedings in England. But Garrett, I'm going to turn to you next. What's happened stateside post-pandemic? Did courts here go largely virtual, or are they still that way?
I think it's a great question, and it kind of depends on the geography of what you mean by in the United States, because the initial response to the pandemic varied pretty considerably. You saw in certain rural areas of the country, or less urban areas, there wasn't a major shift to remote proceedings. For instance, I do a fair amount of work in North Dakota, and there was only a very brief period where they were full remote. And you know, some of that's political and some of it's just geographic, you know, a response to the pandemic based on population density. And so you saw a kind of a ranging response to the pandemic on the front end. And so we've seen sort of a rolling return to life as normal in the judiciary on the back end. So for instance, in North Dakota, the Chief Justice of the District of North Dakota, Federal Court in North Dakota, issued an order on Friday basically saying, we're back to normal. We'll continue to have remote hearings in the same way that we did before the pandemic. I mean, that was a thing before the pandemic. If you had a scheduling conference hearing or something like that, that might have been remote. But we'll keep doing that, is what the order says. But other than that, expect to return to life as normal. Whereas in places like Houston, we're still full remote for the most part. There are occasionally hearings in person. Jury trials are, of course, being conducted in person, but on a much more limited basis than they were before the pandemic. And I think we're seeing, you know, movements to getting that back in the more urban areas, but it's lagging.
And I guess that stands to reason, as you sort of alluded, we've had such divergent responses in the U.S. to COVID-19 and the different protocols. It only stands to reason that, I guess, courts would adopt differing procedures. I mean, does it make it hard as a lawyer to know what you're facing? Or I guess each court lays out what its policies are in terms of remote hearings.
It makes it hard from a strategic standpoint because those changed a lot. But I think courts did a really good job of kind of laying out what their expectation was. And to the credit of, I think, American attorneys generally, we have had great experiences working with our counterparties, opposing parties, on kind of jointly developing an understanding of how the proceeding was going to go, and seeking clarity when it was unclear from the court if we needed to. But it was really the changing elements of it, the court's changing expectations, that made this difficult. For instance, I think at the end of last year, the Eastern District of Texas in Beaumont attempted a jury trial, and that jury trial had to get continued because people became infected. You know, if you're in that trial situation, you're got to deal with a lot of change based on your efforts to sort of coordinate or comply with the court's expectations. And those expectations just shifted a lot.
Well, we're going to talk today about mainly two types of models for remote proceedings. One is fully remote, where, of course, none of the litigants are in person. And we'll also talk about hybrid models where you have some participants in person and some remote. Fiona, I know you've had experience handling a very significant dispute, which was fully remote, involved, as I understand it, litigants from all over the world, really. Can you tell me a little bit about how that case and how it was conducted?
Of course. So my first virtual hearing arose out of a hearing that actually started in person in February 2020. It concerned the termination by our client of a contract for the design and construction of a drilling rig. The international nature of the dispute means that on average, there were about 50 people in the hearing room at any one time. And some of these people had traveled from around the world, including Sweden, Norway, the USA, South Korea, and also from throughout the United Kingdom. As the countries closed their borders and non-essential contact with others was discouraged, the hearing was adjourned. However, our client was keen that the hearing should continue virtually, and arrangements were made to make this possible in just under 6 weeks from when the hearing was adjourned. The same 50 people virtually attended the hearing, but this time from their homes rather than in person, with equipment having to be provided to the tribunals and the advocates and those giving evidence, and the electronic copy of the trial bundle largely replacing the paper copies that everyone had been referring to previously.
It's almost hard to conceive. When you've got that sort of situation, does one party take control of the technology, or is it the courts making sure everyone's got the technology that they need and then it's coordinated, or is it everyone sort of responsible for their own tech?
In this case, we took the lead, but we employed a service provider who gave us that technical support. I think that is crucial, certainly from my experience over here, is to get someone on board, kind of like similarly as you would when you hire a room, they provide the services in that room. You need a service provider that will provide the technical side. And that's what we did here.
So Fiona, I'm curious how the hearing went or how the remote proceeding went. I'd love to hear the pros and cons of it.
Okay, well, the biggest advantage of having a remote hearing was the fact that we were able to proceed with the hearing quite promptly after the adjournment. The current position in England means that it still is unclear when our arbitration would have been heard. And whilst we're now in a position that our client has received an award, if we'd had to wait, it would obviously have been very unsatisfactory for the client. The other big advantage, which I think is one that everyone always talks about, is the reduction in travel. You have the obvious fact that that creates more freedom for those that are involved. You know, witnesses and experts don't have to be at the physical hearing, but can still attend. But it also addresses things in addition to availability as visa issues. It's not all plain sailing, though. We obviously have some disadvantages. And I think the worst thing that we still are struggling to completely resolve is communication. This is a big disadvantage in virtual hearings, as you're not with your team. You've got no one with you. You're just by yourself. And therefore, you have to rely on electronic means such as WhatsApp or Microsoft Teams in place of the traditional post-it note, which we still use over here. And I don't think it's very effective, or simply not as effective as being able to pass someone a note and ensure that they have read it. You've also got to replace a conference call at the end of the day instead of being able to have a quick chat with someone over coffee during a break.
My understanding is the technology then would allow you to talk with your fellow team members privately outside of others' view. Is that right, or is that difficult to do?
You can obviously do that, but I think for the advocate that is speaking, they get distracted with having those messages, and therefore you have to ensure that you want to know that your message is received, but you can't ring them up. You can't, you know, ensure that they're looking at that screen. Whereas in court, you can put a post-it note right in the middle of their notes, and they see it, and you know they've acknowledged it.
And so, but when you're conducting examinations, those are done virtual. How did you find that? Was it, do you think, harder for the witnesses, harder for the advocates to get the information across that they wanted to?
I think it worked both ways. I think it was successful. We had we already had a good relationship because we had started in person, but it was still successful. I think there are concerns that virtual hearings do lead to some witnesses possibly being slightly more relaxed, but certainly in this case, it worked well. We didn't have a problem.
I guess the nature of it is some witnesses do better remotely and some may do better in person, I would
definitely,
imagine.
Definitely correct. A different witness, a different expert, we may have had a very different experience.
Well, thanks for that, Fiona. Garrett, I'm going to turn to you. I know you have also had experience with virtual proceedings. Can you tell me a little bit about the case that you handled remotely?
Yeah, we represented a large midstream pipeline company in a proceeding in bankruptcy, an adversary proceeding in bankruptcy, which is basically like a trial about a legal issue or a, you know, what you typically see is a dispute within the bankruptcy. So the bankruptcy is all about, you know, who's going to get what portion of the estate, how do we divide this up, how does the entity in bankruptcy come out and find a new path forward. And as disputes come up in that, those become adversary proceedings. So we represented this company in this adversary proceeding. It's a two-week trial to the bankruptcy judge in Delaware, done remotely. But unlike Fiona, we went with a hybrid model, which is the term hybrid. I think it's just hilarious because it just basically means anything that's not in person or full remote. I mean, it's just like a super varied term, right?
Encompasses a lot.
Whatever you want it to mean, really. And so in our situation, we basically made a makeshift courtroom in our office. So we have a large conference room. We turned that large conference room into the same layout that you would expect to see in a court. We set up about seven cameras in that makeshift court, and we all sat in our virtual courtroom and presented our case as if we were in a courtroom. It's just that the only people in that courtroom were us, and we were piping the judge and the opposing counsel into our courtroom through Zoom. And so it was for us a normal proceeding. Outside of our team, it was a remote proceeding, hence the hybrid term.
The judge in Delaware was watching this play out, this proceeding in Houston, all in
correct.
One place.
And, yeah. And the other side, you know, essentially did a full remote proceeding. So they had a large team as well, but they decided to maintain their locations and their homes or wherever they were with their witnesses in their own homes and to do the proceeding remotely that way. And so this kind of goes to the point that in a lot of these virtual settings, it's kind of up to you how you want to do it. And we felt like a hybrid setting was better for us, largely because we had a massive team. We were kind of coordinating three law firms. There were about 12 people in the courtroom just from Haynes and Boone in several of these instances. We had a deep bench and we wanted to leverage that. And so for us, this hybrid model was basically essential.
I'm curious, Gary, did you have any playbook to go by or did you sort of make up this format on the fly? Not on the fly, I'm sure a ton of thought went into it, but I just wonder if you had a template to go off of.
I would love to say that I came up with this, but I didn't. a couple of the partners in our group, David Ammons principally, kind of came up with this setup working with our incredible IT department. And we just thought this was a better way to handle in a large team setting.
Well, it's interesting because you had within the proceeding almost two different models. One of the other side was fully remote. We were hybrid. How did it go? How did the hybrid approach work, do you think?
I think the hybrid model works really well if you don't have some of the same issues that Fiona just flagged. The hybrid model requires some travel. Not everybody had to go to Delaware, and most of our team was in Houston, hence why the reason we chose Houston to sort of serve as our makeshift courtroom. But witnesses did have to travel. They just didn't have to travel to Delaware. And so there's that upside. Beyond that, it's like being in a real trial. And so some of the problems that Fiona just flagged aren't there. I could literally hand a note to my partners or, you know, a person who was cross-examining a witness and I knew they had it. We could make eye contact and, you know, I could emphasize certain things to them in the sort of non-verbal means that are so important, I think, when you're in a trial setting that are just so hard to do over Zoom. But I mean, at the point that we're at in this hybrid setting, most of the benefits of being remote are gone, right? I just don't have to go to Delaware is essentially the only upside. And there's a lot of downsides. So there is a huge technological hurdle to get over in putting this together.
In some ways, the technology seems harder than fully remote.
I think it is. I don't have to have my witnesses practice as much as I would if I were fully remote to make sure they're comfortable with the technology because we're going to manage the technology on our end. But on our end, we have seven cameras and microphones that can conflict and stuff like that, and we have to plan for that. And so I think that's the real challenge in a hybrid model.
Thanks for that, Garrett. I think finally here, I'm just curious from both of you, how much of this do you think will last once we return to normal, hopefully pretty soon? Fiona, do you think English tribunals will remain remote, somewhat remote going forward?
I don't think the virtual hearings are going to continue. I think they're going to be very rare. But I do think we are going to continue to see some of the elements of a virtual hearing in arbitration in the future. And much like Garrett has described, we're going to end up with, on occasion, not all the time, some hybrid hearings, probably for shorter cases or where there is a shorter hearing before the court or where a witness is only required to give some limited evidence.
I would guess the plus is that courts now have experience with this. So this all will be dictated by the course of this virus going forward. We won't have to go back into lockdown, but if we do, I suppose courts will be much more ready to, you know, deploy some of these hybrid models.
Absolutely. Something that always makes me chuckle is that in my very first case many, many years ago, the judge was very keen for us to have electronic bundles and couldn't understand why there was so much paper in the courtroom. And, you know, finally now one of the English courts has indicated that in the next iteration of its rules, it will indicate that electronic bundles are to be the default position. So there's definitely some plus sides that have come out of it.
Excellent. And I know we've all become more adept at figuring out how to mute and unmute seamlessly. So, Garrett, let me ask you now to peer into your crystal ball. What do you see going forward for U.S. courts?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a similar thing in the U.S. as Fiona just described. We're gonna see a pretty rapid shift away from virtual for pretty much anything of value. So there were some attempts at virtual jury trials. That's never going to happen again. I really don't think that's a realistic hope going forward. If you're a Houston-based lawyer with a trial coming up in Oklahoma, better saddle up and get up there. I do think, though, that to the point you're making, there is a lot more comfort with this concept especially in non-urban courts than there was before. I distinctly remember before the pandemic, I had a hearing in a far west Texas county, and it was like a 5-minute hearing. And so I called the court coordinator and I said, hey, is there any way we can do this, you know, remotely? Telephone, we had WebEx at the time. And the response I got was basically like, I had grown a third eye in the middle of my forehead. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. And I think especially these sort of rural counties are kind of going to recognize the fact that there's an upside to them here. And I think we're going to see that portion continue for things like status conferences, even summary judgments. But to Fiona's point, the big stuff is just, it's going to go back to in-person and stay there.
Garrett, I would think clients are going to continue to push for cost savings, especially if as you suggest, if there are particular hearings that are not as significant or for lower dollar disputes, really going to demand accommodations that they don't have to travel in person.
I think that's exactly right. A lot of this will be client driven going forward. And we've seen that already in the courts that have opened. We've had clients not so subtly suggest that we should really ask hard if we can do portions of it remotely. And I think that's great. I think anytime we can reduce cost or increase cost savings or minimize the inconvenience that is litigation for our clients, that we want to do that. But again, that's going to largely be whatever the court wants. And, you know, some of these courts might return to their former resistance, some won't. And again, that's part of the U.S. concepts of federalism and a lot of independence between districts and regions.
Well, thanks for that. Fiona, Garrett, any parting thoughts? Anything else you'd like to add about this?
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
Great. Well, with that, Gil, I will turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you, Fiona and Garrett. And thank you, of course, Nathan. And as always, thank you to our loyal listeners. I think one of the big takeaways I've received from this one is the idea that it's going to be not only the courts who decide the future, but the counsel who will propose ideas as it goes forward, and the clients who will help the counsel to decide when alternative strategies are right. And it'll be interesting to see how the advantages of the remote and in-person dispute resolution techniques go forward. We have more podcasts in process for release over the summer, so please stay tuned. We have got one discussing the PACE program involving financing of solar power, another and an update on labor issues that we'll be doing as we get to the close of the summer. So we look forward to you joining us at those times. Until then, be well and stay safe.